Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
66% hooray.
So, once again, we are here in the internet making noises with our mouths because we like to. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And the film that has been chosen this week is Mortal Kombat!
Mortal Kombat!
Fight.
Test
Do you want to have a crack, Abby? Can you say it in the way it's meant to be said?
Mortal Kombat!
Sure, any of those. That's the film that we watched. So, Abby, seeing as you picked it, do you want to give some of the details so people don't think, how are they going to talk about a film that's a video game? Don't be silly. There were film versions of video games too, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
So, Abby.
This is the Mortal Kombat movie from 1995, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, written by Kevin Droney, and starring too many people to list at the beginning. They'll come up as we go along.
No. What do you mean? Too many people.
Fine. Starring Robin Chu as Liu Kang, Lyndon Asprey as Johnny Cage, Bridget Wilson as Sonya Blade, Christopher Lambert as Raiden, and Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa as Shang Tsung.
And why, Abby, did you give us this film to all peruse over the week?
Well, my choosing system this week was to put three movies forward, starring one each of the main actors from Highlander.
Classic theme.
So this was Christopher Lambert's movie. I also put a movie forward with Clancy Brown. I had a movie forward with Sean Connery.
And we went for the Lambert Raiden debut, I guess. So, like, is that the right way to put it?
Well, it was his only outing. There is a sequel to this, but he didn't play Raiden in there. It was some other guy.
The guy from The Warriors. He's the second Raiden.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's the same Raiden, but in the second film, I think. Yeah, it's weird. I'll ask you about your relationship to the video games and the film in a minute, Abby. But it's strange how, on the surface, this is a fairly well-known bad movie, but really, it's only bad if you haven't seen the sequel, and then you kind of reassess what bad is, because the sequel to Mortal Kombat, the movie, is terrible, and yet I very much want it to be good, because Mortal Kombat 2 is just the other characters from the game, and it's just, I just want Mortal Kombat 2 to be as reasonable as I think this one is, and it just is a shame, because it's not. Anyway, this one is the one we're supposed to talk about. Abby, Mortal Kombat, what does it mean to you?
Well, I came to the games fairly late.
In the game?
Yes.
No, that would imply that was towards the end of your life.
I'd say I maybe only played my first one in 2010, maybe. Maybe slightly earlier, but not much.
Yeah, once you were getting on board with the whole PS3 games, you kind of got invested a bit.
Right.
No, that's not true, because you played Shaolin Monks with me, because that's the two-player one, I think. Maybe?
I did. I don't know when that was.
I think it might... All right, either way, you are not one of these people like me who remembers playing it in the arcade back when you used to go outside, then find a small shop type place that had video games in called an arcade, and then you paid money to play them in a place. I mean, it just doesn't even make sense anymore.
A designated area in which to play video games.
Yeah, do you remember that, Anthony? Do you ever play like games in an arcade?
I do indeed. I used to spend a lot of my time in the local video arcade. And specifically, I remember playing Mortal Kombat there for the first time.
Yeah, me too. I think next to it might have been the Michael Jackson video game Moonwalker.
Yes, well, very close by. There was also a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one.
And classic.
And a Space Invaders.
Oh.
You'll probably want to cut this out of the broadcast, but where was this arcade?
Oh, it was the Glen.
The Glen, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. I forgot that that stuff was in there. All my parents ever went there was for terrible food and possibly able to snooker.
It was just that time where you could go to a cafe for old people, or the arcade for young teenagers, or the ball pool at Die of the Dragons. Yeah, so, you know, even before me and Anthony knew each other, we frequented the same place for children's video games. You know, I was quite young when the Mortal Kombat series began, but it was a kind of early fighter game that was kind of infamous for being slightly more bloody and gory than the rest, and it's full of ninjas. And then later on, as it came on to home consoles, I started getting into it, probably around about the kind of PS2 era rather than earlier. And then from then on, I've kind of been a big fan of the series. It's had some ups and downs, but I always enjoy them because they're kind of funny. They're full of, you know, colourful characters and lots of silly deaths and fight moves, and you know, they're just kind of fun and a bit over the top, and they've got that kind of cool, violent side as well. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the series, and the movies are a part of that in my mind. What about you, Anthony?
I was never quite as big a fan as you. I remember the first few generations of the game, and that's all that really kind of took my interest. Because I remember, like, at the time, they were the only kind of, like, slightly more adult kind of video game that you could get your hands on, because it actually contained, like, actual kind of blood and gore.
Yeah. Well, but they were kind of infamous for their fatalities that happened. If you know how to put in the special code, your player would, like, rip the head off of your opponent, which was kind of amazing if you were 13 years old.
Yeah, but I can't say I was that enamored by it. They were pretty simple games, just kind of beat 'em ups, and kind of once they were done, they were done.
It's amazing it's got as far as it has, really.
Yeah, I think it did well to update its graphics in line with each generation and kind of go, we know there'll always be young teenagers who want to see cool swords going through things and ripping off legs and beating people to death with them. Like, you and pit deaths and acid baths and essentially scantily clad women ninjas as well. That's something it cornered the market in.
Oh, yeah.
So it's certainly, you know, it's got its fan base that are all very loyal, and it always appeals to that kind of age group of like 12 to 15. And then some of us later on in life as well, because we're sad. But you like Christopher Lambert because of your love of Highlander. But that it doesn't mean he's good in one thing. It's going to translate necessarily, does it? I mean,
well, he's a lot like Sean Connery, actually, in that he's always Christopher Lambert in things. So if you like Christopher Lambert, you're going to like him in most things he's in.
Yeah, he's got the classic Lambert laugh that he just does his little like I don't know, it's an odd one. But you saw this movie, Abby, the first time not that long ago, did you?
I potentially saw the movie before I'd ever played the games.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it's very 90s because of the music and the fact that it was in that era when you did things physically, not just, there's CGI in it, so it's got some slightly pioneering CGI, but it's, you know, practical effects. And what's that stuff that Goro's made out of?
Prosthetics.
Like animatronics.
Oh, yeah.
Prosthetics,
yeah.
And animatronics. And it's in that whole, let's push the boundaries of like the visual side as much as we can, but still real, like part real anyway. So you'd seen it. Have we all seen it just a while ago, like as well as recently?
Yeah, I remember seeing it like when it first came out when I was a kid, and remember really liking it because it was Mortal Kombat. I don't know. And then I remember seeing it again in university years, I suppose, and recognizing it as a not so good film.
Yeah, there's the there's maybe, if you're the right age for it, it was the first time where it's exciting because you're kind of into that kind of stuff. And it's kind of, you know, it's fairly loyal to the source material in that ninjas fight each other. And
use random catchphrases here and there for no apparent reason.
One of the things that was kind of cool about it was they did use terminology from the game, but they got it wrong sometimes because there'd be fights where, like in the video game, if you get a fight where you win and the other opponent hasn't hurt you at all, then you get a flawless victory. And Shang Tsung kept saying that,
yeah,
when it wasn't appropriate.
He kept bandying it that about. He kept bandying it about, and it's like, no, this is not flawless.
That's how he gets himself over as a villain, though. Everyone hates him because he keeps saying it wrong.
Yeah, he's a jerk. But anyway, like, I guess you watch it once because you like it and you like that stuff and you're young and you don't know better, you haven't developed quality taste. And then you watch it later as a kind of nostalgia, oh, it's so bad, it's good kind of thing. And then you get older again and you watch it in a sort of snooty film critic way like we have and kind of put our thinking caps on and, you know, take it apart and maybe, you know, come to more pretentious conclusions about it. We'll see if that's what happens.
I will say that coming into this time, I was kind of expecting not to like it again and for it to be, and me just to be like, oh God, I have to watch this, it's going to be bad, blah, 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 blah. But I will say that I didn't think it was that bad this time around.
That's the weird thing about it. When I watched it this time, most of the time it was fine. It didn't... That's the average of this film, is fine. But there are moments where it was very nearly excellent. And then there are other moments where it was really dicey. And it's when it had those moments of, oh, this is almost really good.
Yeah.
Oh, you ruined it.
I think another thing that was a factor for me when I was watching it this time is I've become more of an aficionado of Mortal Kombat. I've done like a lot of illustrations like of the characters, so I've played a lot of the game's stories a few times by now. And I've become quite aware of the extended universe and the general... Because what happens in the game, they often retell the same story for the next generation, and then they sort of create parallel universes where there's, like, kind of, this is the original Mortal Kombat story, this is the second one, this is the third, let's do them again, but with different results. And the whole game is kind of, you know, you're always going to fight the same characters over and over in different combinations. So I know quite a lot about it, and this time I was just thinking about it in terms of, oh, I can see why people would dislike the use of these characters, and I could see where it really was successful. Like, it kind of nailed in the characters in terms of, well, casting the right people for the certain roles, and then it underused certain characters. Like, for example,
all of them.
Scorpion. No, but like Scorpion and Sub-Zero, who are like the fundamentally, one's a yellow ninja and he has fire, and one's a blue ninja and he throws ice about. Like, they are really popular characters in the games, and they have quite a compelling story about a kind of never-ending grudge, and a, like, there's a kind of thing about Sub-Zero having being misunderstood, and he's not responsible for the murder of Scorpion's family, and, you know, there's a kind of interesting story in the games. And in this, they're just Shang Tsung's henchmen that he's brainwashed. And I can see why Mortal Kombat fans would kind of be annoyed that their favourite characters are sort of mini-bosses along the journey of the film.
Not only that, but like they are the most two kind of... Well, I suppose they're supposed to be kind of polar opposites, but in this film they are, because Scorpion is so ridiculous and has so many things going on about him. And then Sub-Zero has kind of like one thing and a short scene where he's defeated. Yeah. So it's like, there's a bit of an imbalance going on here.
Yeah, one of them drags you to a kind of red-lit bamboo scaffolding hell and fights you for ages. Rips his, like, stuff comes out, like, classically for Scorpion, a rope with a weird spike on it that for some reason in this has teeth, but it shoots out of his hand, and I was like, oh, that's the best thing in Mortal Kombat where Scorpion does that. And he does that, but then he also like rips his like face off and has a burning skull head, and that's all the stuff that are just in the video game because it's cool stuff that teenagers want to see. Like, there's no, sometimes you have to forgive the fact that stuff is done arbitrarily because it's just done to be cool. And his fight scene is quite good, and then it's just Sub-Zero's, you can defeat him by chucking some water at him from a bucket.
That was
which would have been a nice thing to actually have said to him, but no, they have to go like in a roundabout kind of riddle, kind of mysterious way, which isn't really a riddle or mysterious at all.
Yeah, Katana just cryptically says something about like use the element of life or whatever.
That's not what bothered me the most about it. That whole sort of strand in general was naff, but the part where she just came, stood in the doorway and looked at him, and then we heard the recall, was tedious.
Oh,
it could have just been her turning up and going cough and saying, use the bucket.
There's so many incidents of people just kind of turning up, standing around and looking mysterious and then leaving.
Yeah. There are a lot of things that don't make sense in terms of like plot, because they're trying to write, essentially, lots of characters fight each other in a tournament. They have to kind of write the story around that and figure out, okay, how do we get these two to fight here and it be dramatic and in a different location? And sometimes it's just, so the people all turn up together and they fight, and they kind of don't waste too much time over some stuff that would make more sense if people had motivations to be somewhere or do something.
Well, they had a really difficult job in this because they were trying to make sense of a tournament that doesn't make sense. There's a couple of times where they sort of sidestepped around the question of, why are we doing this again? How does this work?
Because weirdly, in a tournament, okay, essentially, let's get to the, okay, the last thing about Sub-Zero, then we'll go back to the sort of plot and what's weird about it. But the one thing about Sub-Zero's death, when he gets the old bucket of water chucked and he freezes it with his powers and it kind of stabs him, that would have been a cooler way for Dorothy to defeat the witch with a bucket of water. I think if she'd have been throwing an ice spell and she'd been like stabbed through the chest with the massive icicle, you know, it was better in that regard.
60 years too late, Mortal Kombat. 60 years too late.
There's already been a bucket of water takedown. Okay, so the premise: for some reason, Earth is oblivious again to the other realms in the universe. We're kind of, I'm just trying to stop bad guys and live my life as a monk or whatever, or be a movie star, depending on which character we talk about. And then for some reason, there's been a tournament going on with all these, like, there's Earth Realm, Outworld, Nether, the Nether Realm. There's lots of realms, apparently. And they all have a fighting tournament to decide. It's like best of 10 gets to take over the other places or something? Is that the gist?
Yes, I think so.
And you have to win 10 in a row.
10 in a row, start the show. That's the rhyme they use. No, apparently there's this emperor who, in the game, is a very beefy dude with a big metal hammer and a scary skull metal hat and whatever. He's a big scary boss in the second film, I think. And anyway, this dude is wanting to invade Earth, but he can only do it if he wins 10 in a row in this Mortal Kombat tournament that who knows who organized it. Maybe it's the Elder Gods. Maybe it was FIFA. I don't know. But it's important and it's end of the world type stuff. So the Thunder God Raiden, who is a character, puts together three of the world's best fighters, seemingly arbitrarily, but doesn't really let them know what's happening till they are in the tournament and sort of duped to going.
Well, it isn't Raiden, and that's the thing that kind of gets me. It's Shang Tsung kind of manipulating them all into coming. And I never really knew why, because it never seemed like it was really his plan, even though he seemed to be kind of implying that he had a plan for having these people there. Like he would constantly be giving hints to Sonya that, like, she's like something more to this, but not really.
Surely his thing should have been, well, I'll just pick three of the worst fighters. I'll have Bertie Bassett. He can come. We can just eat him. I don't know. That's a really weird reference to make. You know, you could just have Mr. Bean turn up. Like, you could just have a turnip with a face drawn on it and enter them as Earth's competitors.
I think that's got something to do with Raiden, because I think otherwise Raiden would have picked. So I think Shang Tsung has picked good enough for Raiden not to complain, but not so good as that he's too worried about them.
But okay,
Raiden's picking that because he seems to know that they're the chosen ones, even though only one can win, so they should know it's Liu Kang. Whatever. He wants good competitors, and they've picked three of the best martial artists, seemingly out of a hat. And Shang Tsung wants them to come, maybe because he's arrogant then. Maybe it's just he wants to have a good competition. I don't know. But they're all on a scary boat and shipped off to possibly another universe, possibly an island in Thailand. Actually, there's a few shots that I think are from Thailand, generally, because there's some epic, you know, ruins that can be manipulated to look stunning in a film.
But they do say that they're in Thailand, to be fair. They're not sneaky about it.
But then we also have some beach and some, like, they use ruins to sort of enhance, as the sort of building blocks that they then enhance with their own sculptures and kind of art decoration to give it a more Mortal Kombat theme. Stick a few dragons about, scary gargoyle men, you know, and make it more colourful.
And I think that's kind of where this film kind of ultimately succeeds, is in its visual design. Just the pure way it looks is very appealing. Like the sets they have are really ornate and they're full of stuff and there's constantly something to look at. And just, there's lots of wide shots of, like, giant castles on mountains and stuff like that. And I just think it looks really good and it really kind of captures some of the visual kind of flair and design from the video games.
Yeah, it's definitely trying. And considering it's the mid-90s, they've done really well to get it to look as good as it does. It's not perfect because, you know, modern standards change what's acceptable, but it is ambitious and visually creative, and because it wants to, you know, have a different feel for different fights, they do have like very nice different sets and different locations, you know, whether it's creepy lairs or grand fighting rooms or, you know, weird bamboo hell place they go, or just a beach. Sometimes the beach is nice. And that is one of the plus points, is it visually tries very hard, and I think for the most part succeeds in being creative and kind of stunning. They use some very good like CGI as well to kind of make places look bigger and feel bigger. And
Surprisingly, I suppose this would have been the early days, but like this film had a really good balance of just enough CGI that you didn't particularly notice, except for one major bit, but I'm sure we'll get to that at some point.
Yes.
Well, we can talk about it now. I mean, are we all on the same page and thinking it was the bit where they introduced Reptile, or...?
Yeah.
No? Yes. Yeah.
That was a weird choice. I was doing some reading before the show, and apparently that was an afterthought because some people weren't but the focus group said that they didn't like the film very much. They weren't satisfied with the fights that they already had, and focus groups. So they added in Reptile later on, and that they didn't actually know what he was going to look like, so it made it really hard to do the scenes with the actors where it wasn't there.
But also, they had a ninja fight where he becomes like a man, so they must have filmed that. I mean, they just had to put in some CGI to say, oh, look, this guy was a reptile, and then he turned into it. Actually, the whole thing, right? Okay, so Reptile, when we first see him, kind of midway through, he's a sort of henchman of Shang Tsung, the bad guy who's getting them all in the tournament and wants to win because he'll be powerful and blah, blah, blah. Like, he's a henchman, and he starts off as a creepy statue in a place where there's other statues. And then he comes to life, and he looks awful because it's all colourful suddenly and looks really cheap and weird.
The thing about Reptile for me is that they made him so ugly, and in a really pathetic way.
In a terrible animated idea way. Not hideous, just sort of, what is that?
And I kind of get it, because we've already had like Sub-Zero and Scorpion, and they look the same. So introducing like a third ninja, which is just like another colour-coordinated kind of Power Ranger thing going on, might have been a bit, this again. But That's what it ends up being anyway, because, like, there's nothing really to distinguish Reptile from the other two.
Once he becomes a ninja, that's one of the weirder things, is Liu Kang, who is one of our main heroes from Earth, and is a monk that is just disenfranchised and a bit upset because Shang Tsung killed his brother and he feels guilty and blah. He notices that they're being followed somehow and spots that Reptile, who has a chameleon effect, and catches him. They have a small fight, and then he ends up with we're in Outworld, which is a kind of weird alternate universe that's a little bit more purple and a little bit more corpsey. Reptile ends up in the chest cavity of a, I don't know, monster statue, and then morphs into a kind of gargoyle beast, and then becomes a regular green ninja, and then they fight.
Yeah.
There's a cool bit where, like, in the video games, he kicks Liu Kang through a wall into the next arena they're going to fight in, and they have quite a good fight, really. And then when Reptile's inevitably defeated, he becomes the monster thing again, breaks open, and there's all these worms and bugs coming out of him, and then Liu Kang kind of finds the Reptile in there and squashes him. And it's just like, what was all that with the chest cavity corpse thing?
Who knows? It's kind of like, for me, it's like, okay, you've changed Reptile. I can see why you've done it. But if you're going to build something even bigger. Like, even though it was probably one of the more technically good fights in the film, and well-paced, and just one of the better ones, it just kind of falls a bit flat, because you think it's going to be something more special, because he's like this weird reptile creature that has just bonded with a weird statue, and you think it's going to be something big and, like, weird, like Goro was, but no, just a person.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, Scorpion and Sub-Zero, but now he's got a scary mouth on his faceplate, and is green and black. I mean, one of the other things, as a fanboy, that people might be annoyed about is Sub-Zero and Scorpion are not lesser than Reptile. Like, Reptile is first boss territory. He's the first ninja you might have to defeat. And Scorpion and Sub-Zero should be a big deal. And they're kind of dispatched early on. Scorpion in quite a cool way, with his weird Johnny Cage just beats him up enough so that he sort of
explodes,
yeah.
So insane.
and Reptile has a longer fight and gets a few more of the, like, weird, more video game like martial arts happening, where, like, Liu Kang's essentially floating and kicking and doing weird stuff in the air, and there's a lot more flipping about, and it feels a bit more video gamey. But it should be the other way around. Reptile should have been your first henchman, and Sub-Zero and Scorpion should have been more intimidating. I don't know, but hey, you know, other things. Abby, any characters you want to talk about, and we might talk about their journey a bit more.
It's difficult to know where to start, because it, in a good way, they kind of hit the ground running with these guys.
Mm.
So we've got Liu Kang, Johnny Cage, and Sonya Blade, who all come together fairly quickly. I'd like to give a quick nod to Kano, actually, who overcomes the rather lackluster prosthetic he has to wear for his red eye. But you instantly don't like him in the best possible way.
Well, he's such a comic book villain, kind of the terrible, like, British accent that even in the game sounds more like Australian. And he's just got his, like, rip-off Terminator cyborg eye. And he's a fag. And he likes eating chicken off the bone. And, bleh, I've got a knife and I ate Sonya. He's like that, isn't he?
he doesn't end up amounting to very much. It's like, I suppose they've given him a fairly good build-up, like the beginning with Sonya and then getting on the boat and then hiding from them. And he looks intimidating. Like, his eye thing is weird and never explained, but it looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
And he looks hard, but then nothing really comes of it. He just has one very short fight.
Bit of exposition with Goro to sort of explain why there's a four-armed giant orange monster in the tournament. Yeah, but his plasticky eye aside and the dodgy accent, which I think is kind of the character anyway, it'd be wrong if he was more believable as a human.
Mm.
And he's kind of Sonya's kind of rival slash first decent fight. And one of the weird things is when they do have a fight, I think it's on the beach, he has a weird triangular pointy bit of chest hair. I don't know why they sculpted his hair to be a weird triangle. Does anyone else think that was odd? Or but even notice?
It was all contributing to him being an absolute tragedy of a person.
I can't say I noticed myself.
All I'm here for is to be thick, and when people call me stupid, I just go, well, I want some money, don't I? Like, he just doesn't seem to care when they slag him off as well. It's odd. But what was kind of brutal is Sonya is one of the good guys, and she does essentially a sort of like a wrestling move where she sort of, it's like a head scissors, isn't it? And then once he's got him locked in the head scissors, she like snaps his neck, and it's just like, oh, the good guys are okay with killing people some of the time then, are they?
That was something early on that you sort of had to take on board, that, oh, you are going to kill these people and you're not going to feel bad about it. Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird because the Sonya fight is the second kind of Mortal Kombat fight. And in the first one, it's Liu Kang versus some dreadlocked, shouty black guy.
Yeah.
And there, he kind of just beats him up and doesn't kill him. So it kind of, that's taken away from him. But like Sonya kind of like really gets into it and enjoys it when she manages to kill him. And
she's pursuing him as a cop or something. So she should really want to detain him.
Yeah, and it would have made sense, like, if it was in the final third of the film and it was wrapping up her story.
Mm.
And because it could have built to it, but nah. It was just a weird tone that it shifted to because of that.
Another thing that's kind of odd is that it should be this thing where the participants kind of fight to the death. And there should be an element of it where Shang Tsung is goading people into going further than just defeating them and actually killing them because he wants their souls or whatever. But also, that's kind of what the game is about. In a way, killing in such a bland way with just a like sort of implied death is kind of missing out on the fun of Mortal Kombat, which is about ridiculous kills where you rip people's spine out and chop off their head with it or something. You know, like, why not, if you're making a Mortal Kombat film, go all the way. It almost would be better as a film if it was animated, like some of the cutscenes are, especially the more modern games. They're so amazing and ridiculous. You know, you could string that out for, you know, 90 minutes. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sonya is a cop. She kills Kano. She's in the tournament. But it doesn't amount to that much, because at the end she's just taken like a sort of hostage princess and enslaved briefly.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Hmm.
Yeah, because she's the most kind of like, I don't know, like butt-kicking one of the three, I suppose, where she's actually, you know, going in and doing stuff and looking for someone and trying to sort things out. And then when it comes to her at the end, she just becomes a kind of frail, screaming woman. And that's just a bit sad.
Mm.
Just the classic Leia treatment of being put in a sexier clothes, sort of. Just a bit horrible, brown leather stuff. But yeah, it's essentially just chained up. For some reason. I don't know why Shang Tsung doesn't want to... He wants her as a slave woman or something? Because he kind of fancies her or something? I don't know.
Maybe?
He wants everyone else dead, so I don't know why he's so fussed on just this harsh blonde woman. But whatever. Yeah, in fact, what's kind of strange is the hero of the three that emerges initially is Johnny Cage. Like, Johnny Cage is your arrogant kind of action movie guy who, you know, hands out autographs when he kills people and takes his sunglasses off when he means business. And he's kind of funnily arrogant and it's lots of
one-liners.
Yeah, they're kind of playing on the tropes of movie action heroes with him. And he wins essentially the tournament because he just cuts to the chase, challenges the 9-time champion, Goro, their big orange four-armed monster with a horrible ponytail, and just goes, I'll take him on now. Let's just do this. And then because
essentially he just decides that he's fallen in love with Sonya.
Yeah.
What I added to this movie myself was that without any... The actor himself, I'm fairly sure, was doing a thing with Johnny Cage where Johnny Cage was having a complete psychotic episode where he actually believed that he was in a film and that he was the lead role and that he had to be the man to do it. Because the way he did it was so filmic, I think he'd actually gone mad.
It would make more sense if they'd have played it like that, I think. That he was just, I can't accept that we've gone to another realm and we're in a tournament where people are dying. And then he just thinks he's in a movie. Would have made more sense. You're right. But they didn't exactly play it like that. And after we've had a few fights, and it's, you know, the excitement has built up and certain henchmen have been beaten up as well. It's a bit odd where Johnny Cage takes down the champion with a kind of wry nod to an in-joke from the video games. And a kind of complete ridiculous move of, I will do the splits and I will just punch you downstairs. Thus, complete incapacitating the bad guy by just giving him a low blow. And then running away to a cliff edge where he can sort of fight him a bit, but basically just kick him off. And it's just like, that's how this guy wins. He does that.
Not only that, but like before it happens, he says, don't worry, I have a plan. So your plan was to do the splits, hit a giant four-armed creature from a different realm who may or may not have genitalia in the genitalia and run away to a cliff. Isn't the best plan ever?
Still works. And the weird thing is Raiden tries to stop the bargain with Shang Tsung, because Shang Tsung's like, oh, I don't know about putting you straight to the champion. That's not in the rules that we seem to make up as we go along. And then Johnny Cage is like, look, I'll agree to your deal that if you can then challenge me if I... Like, it's kind of Shang Tsung can step in and challenge him so the tournament isn't over if he wins. And Raiden's like, no, don't. And then Shang Tsung's like, just agreed, mate. You're just seconds too late, so I will fight him at the end if you want. It's even weirder, because Shang Tsung doesn't say, I'll fight you if you win. He goes, I will fight someone I choose. It's like, isn't that how the tournament... Like, how does this tournament work? It seems open challenges can come from anywhere.
I think that's kind of where the movie really falls down, is it just it has no rules, so it can't stick to them.
Yeah. And then all of this is made irrelevant. So you beat the champion, he's dead off a cliff, hooray. The stupid four-armed idiot who squandered the opportunity to do a great fatality as well. Like, when Goro beats some of the jobbers, I mean, he mainly just throws people on the ground in a montage. But when they have this cool orange, like, animatronic, part man, possibly part animation guy, he's got, like, this guy Johnny Cage has seen once, so likes him. He's got him ready for a fatality. And you think, oh, he's going to, like, rip off his head or, like, split him in four. And it's like, he just bumps him on the head and offers him as a sacrifice to Shang Tsung. And it's like, you squandered that, Goro. You squandered that. Did either of you feel a bit ripped off when he didn't do a massive, epic fatality?
I won't pretend I wasn't. I was. I don't know what exactly, but something.
Something cool. Not just bonk. He's dead now, apparently. What was I saying? Oh, right, so Johnny Cage is essentially the champion, and then Sonya's kidnapped, Shang Tsung's making things more complicated by running off to a different realm, going up his tower, which must take ages, considering how tall it is. And then Liu Kang and Johnny Cage just basically go, we'll follow them in then, I guess, and follow this up, and get into more trouble in this other realm. And it's just like, as soon as we get to the big, okay, Shang Tsung's going to take on the champion, it's like, for some reason, Liu Kang says, I'll fight you, Shang Tsung, even though Johnny Cage has just defeated the champ, I mean, admittedly, in a low blow and some dodgy tactics, but it's that kind of environment. You're allowed to cheat, surely. And then, like, Liu Kang's like, I'll just steal your thunder. And Hulk Hogan it. Like, basically, Abby, it's like it's like that WrestleMania where Bret Hart was taking on Yokozuna. Do you remember? And Bret Hart gets cheated out of it. And then Hulk Hogan comes and turns up. And the bad guy issues a challenge to Hulk Hogan and then gets defeated instantly, like, by Hulk Hogan, as Hulk Hogan just steals all of the thunder. It's just like that with Liu Kang and Chang Tsung.
Like, you're right.
So WrestleMania fans might know what I'm talking about. Sorry, does someone else want to explain the ending? I feel like I've been blathering on for too long.
Well, there's not much to explain. They kind of... It comes down to, like, the final fight between Shang Tsung and Liu Kang. And... They try and make it bigger by saying, like, you will fight yourself, you will fight your enemy, and you will fight something else, I forget right now. But it just becomes a long, convoluted fight where there are so many points where I was just shouting, well, if you just kind of punch him now, you would have won. But no, you're going through this weird kind of family drama.
Yeah, it's a bit odd how Raiden basically knows they all have a flaw, and he basically outright tells them, like, your problem's this, your problem's this, and your problem's that. And they don't really so much overcome them as they just continue going. Like, they don't really resolve anything. And it doesn't quite make sense how Liu Kang is like, I blame myself for the death of my brother, who died because Shang Tsung, I don't know, squished him with his foot at the start of the film. In a weird flashback or whatever it was. And we don't even know why that happened. But Liu Kang blames himself for the death of his brother. And how does he just... I don't know. Like, he overcomes it by fighting, sort of. Essentially, Shang Tsung, as part of his like weird sorcerer tricks, turns into Liu Kang's brother. And it's like, well, obviously I know that Shang Tsung. You just transformed in front of me. Plus my brother's dead. I'll talk to you for a bit and then go, no, I hate you, Shang Tsung. It's your fault. Let's continue fighting.
That was a weird thing, actually. But that's not exclusive to this movie. That's in movies in general where they seem to... Even if someone transforms in front of them, they're still all, you're this person. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose.
I've never understood that in films. It's like, you saw that just happen. Get a grip.
I guess it's supposed to bring the raw emotion to the surface a bit. But it's not the only thing Shang Tsung tries. It's a good classic Shang Tsung thing. He turns into people and mimics them in the games. And that's a nice bit. But he also has a bit where he takes souls of warriors that have been defeated to power himself, keep himself young, blah, blah, blah. For some reason, when someone dies, he sucks their spirit in, and then it goes into his eyeball, like, and makes him seemingly stronger or something. Yeah. And so he has this power to bring back warriors from the dead to fight. So there's a bit where sort of Mortal Kombat logo manholes break open, and like samurais and ancient warriors come out to fight Liu Kang and team up with him because one on one would be too boring at this point. What did you guys make of that as a sort of building it up a bit more?
Again, it was fine. It's the classic kind of, oh, you fought me, now fight my henchmen kind of thing. So I was fine with that, but it's just kind of, whilst he was summoning them, there was plenty of opportunity to attack him.
Yeah, he was way open.
And it just kind of falls into like the film thing of what you can't see can't happen, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't know what I would do, because in a video game, they're just more difficult and they're better at combos and they do their specials more often. In a movie, you know, he's just one guy who has to kick and punch. I guess using these ideas builds more drama. But it's not really about... You kind of know the good guys are going to defeat the bad guy. So it's more about the ride, really, yes, and the fan service. I think it should have been.
I suppose. Like I said, I didn't really have a problem with it, but it was still kind of standard kind of boss thing to do, send in the henchmen.
Yeah.
Just before
it was a good
the last fight, you know what I mean?
It was a good environment as well. They had that massive like Mortal Kombat Dragon logo, and it was a good room to have the final fight in. I don't know why it couldn't have just been scheduled rather than he ran off with a hostage who could have fought back herself, really. And it was also weird of Raiden to be like, can Sonya beat Shang Tsung? No. Then why did you bring her? Like, what was her role in the team if she couldn't possibly beat him? Why so, I don't know, discouraging? I would have also liked Sonya to have a bit more of a fight at the end. Anyway, another character, actually, to bring up before the end of the movie, Katana, who is a princess from, I think it's from Edenia in some cases, and Outworld in others, and blah, blah, blah. There's a mysterious princess woman who's a ninja, and she's in it a bit, but it's kind of inexplicable if you don't know the game stories why she's there. Because Liu Kang fancies her a bit, and she helps a bit, but there's not much else to her story.
There was supposed to be a romance between her and Liu Kang, but they decided to write it out because there was too much going on already.
The romance is there in some of the stories in the games, but it's just odd how she's in it, but not of much value other than to give handy tips and to talk to the participants she's fighting with occasionally.
Yeah, there's also a moment where she and Liu Kang are seemingly having an official kind of Mortal Kombat fight, but for some reason that one doesn't end in a death.
I think she gets disqualified, maybe?
Well, she, yeah, it's like...
Surely that would still end in death, by the rules that have been set up so far.
I don't know.
It's just some things are just left, and you kind of go, they just unravel if you think about them.
Yeah.
And Kitana's one of those points where you kind of go, she should be a bigger part of the story, because she is quite involved in the drama to come in the second movie, in that the sort of emperor who is who's going to benefit from this, she is sort of tied into his family, and there's a whole story that could be in it, but it's not alluded to in the film. She doesn't even use her awesome fans with blades in the film. Like, that's like her weapon of choice in the game. It's like, why didn't we have at least one fight where she uses her weird blade fans? Another missed opportunity. But, you know, whatever. We can't really question something they don't elaborate on, I guess.
I suppose we haven't really talked about Raiden that much either.
He's a mysterious guy. He wears that strange, like, rice picker's hat.
He's also very good at walking in right after he's needed.
Just like the games. That's always his thing.
Oh, fair enough.
And yeah, they nail it entirely.
He's both a god of thunder and a powerful deity, but also kind of rubbish and of no use. Occasionally hands out advice and guides people, but not enough so to be of use, and arrogantly says stuff knowingly, even though seemingly he doesn't know the future exactly. And the way he's played is kind of wry and amusing.
That's all Christopher Lambert, though, isn't it? I don't think he has to try hard to have just the perfect air that, like, they wanted for Raiden. He's just kind of, just because of his voice, he's instantly kind of enigmatic and mysterious, and weird looking, and he just works.
He just works, you're right.
It was, yeah, because Raiden, again, because he's not really from Earth, he can have that weird foreign sounding tone to his voice that adds to, I think, the fact that he isn't sort of, it doesn't sound the same as all the people from Earthrealm has a nice effect, and he looks kind of cool when his eyes are all lit up with lightning. I don't know, like, you can't I don't have any complaints about him other than the character of Raiden is not as helpful as he could be.
Yeah.
This is the weirdest thing to say, because it's completely separate from him, but I do feel like Christopher Lambert knows how to act to be animated over later.
Maybe so.
He could just imagine it really well in his head or something.
How different can it be to The Quickening, really? But, yeah, so that one of the weird things, actually, is because it's a video game about creating colourful characters that fight each other with cool stuff and cool powers going on, there is a little bit of, well, the story's got retconned into making sense, and the mythology was created over time where we flesh out the universe and the world and give people a reason. Each person has a reason to be in the tournaments. And It's not like the game initially is just we want people who look like this to fight each other, and the reason we have different coloured ninjas is it saves on memory if they all just look the same but have a different colour. You know, it's one of those strange things where only after many games can you try and retcon sense out of the story, because it should be about elder gods and then gods that are below the elder gods and then emperors who are somehow powerful because they're so strong and bloodthirsty, and alliances being formed. There's a whole universe, probably not dissimilar to the scale of something like Lord of the Rings, and then we always focus in on these tournament guys. I mean, it is a bit of a challenge to make sense of a always changing video game franchise. Although it would have been younger, so there's less to, you know, worry about. I don't know. I think they did okay,
yeah,
with this plot, but there are these things where you go, well, why is that person there? And the answer's usually, well, they're in the game and they're sort of relevant to this character, you know?
Yeah, anyone just kind of vaguely familiar with the games will probably think it's okay. But anyone who doesn't know anything about the games will be just left totally lost and confused by the end.
Yeah, the best you're going to get out of it if you're not into the games is occasionally something's a bit funny. Like, Johnny Cage is quite funny, and there's the odd moment of drama that's exciting, and the fight scenes are quite good, and you know, but it's all going to fall apart if you're not in the know, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And then when, you know, Liu Kang eventually just gets to punch enough to win, and then eventually punch him off into the spikes that have come up on the cool Mortal Kombat logo, Shang Tsung's defeated, the souls all escape in a dramatic big beam. And his brother needlessly comes out of the ghosty mist, like they've just cracked open the thing in the Ghostbusters. What's that thing called? Where they keep the ghosts.
What is that called?
The Ecto Jobby? What's it called? Oh, I don't know.
The containment grid.
Sure. All these spirits are coming out, and his brother just pops over and is like, hey, bro, I'll see you when you're dead. Thanks, and I don't blame you. Like, oh, good. Just hammer that point home. And let's all cut back to us walking back in the, you know, in Thailand or wherever with loads of kids running around with flags and all looking like heroes, even though that tournament made no sense. But, you know, 9 to Outworld, 1 to Earth, and then I guess there'll be more tournaments and... Do we every 10 years are we in jeopardy? Like, is that the thing?
I thought it was every 100 years or something.
Yeah, it's definitely a long number. Otherwise, it would just be the same people over and over again.
Also, the other thing with the game and the film is called Mortal Kombat. Most of the people in the tournament aren't mortals. They have some strange power or other, or are undead, or are, you know, have lived for thousands of years. Should be called Immortal Kombat, and they should spell it with a C, because that's spelling correctly, combat. K's are so much cooler than C's, though, aren't they? Because they're more jagged. That's probably why.
Yes. Also, the ridiculous ending, where they're like, screw the rules! We're going to do it anyway. Next film.
Yeah, that is kind of the gig with Shao Kahn, I think his name is, the big, beefy guy, who looks like he'd get on in the Mad Max world. At least Mad Max 2, where they're all in sort of bondage-y muscle gear. And he just goes, I'm powerful enough as it is. I guess if we lose, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'll still invade your universe. And that's kind of his deal, is he doesn't really obey the rules. Gets into trouble with the gods, but he just hammers them with his big metal hammer and says no.
Yeah, he's always throwing his toys out the pram.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. It's just there was one line right at the end where, like, Katana says something like to Shang Tsung, it's like, you can't cheat Mortal Kombat. The Emperor will know and he won't let it go. And then it's like, all right, I suppose I'll fight Liu Kang then. But, like, just right at the end, it's kind of like the Emperor seems to just let this guy just invade the world anyway, so what was the point of that?
But, you know, our good guys get to strike a slightly too happy but heroic pose altogether, and like, what, you're gonna fight the big cloud face? Like, what are you gonna do? Like, I mean, I don't even understand how he's invading. He's invading via the same way that, like, Mufasa appeared to Simba in Lion King. He's just in the clouds. Is it a pollution thing? What's going on?
That's a weird 90s thing, actually. Is the bad guy, the really big bad guy shows up, and then your heroes just take a stance and prepare to have a fight, and then we end the show.
Let's hit the 90s rave music with Mortal Kombat lyrics throughout, which is kind of amazing. You should check that song out if you, you know, like
the film. Oh, yeah. I mean, the theme song to both Mortal Kombat and this film is just amazing, and they rightly put it right at the start to suck you in. And the whole film has got a kind of that kind of rock slash techno kind of vibe, which kind of keeps you interested for all the action scenes anyway.
And completely dates it, wham, in the middle of the 90s. And it's just, it's so, you can't get away from it being the 90s. It just feels everything that was the 90s is there somehow. Mm. Everyone's wearing their original Batman t-shirts and also Pulp Fiction merchandise. I can't think of enough 90s things. They got their Oasis album under their arm and they're having an argument about who's better, Oasis or Blur. And the Spice Girls exist, and yeah, it's just a weird 90s world they live in, and that's what the rave music makes me think of. I mean, anyway, guys, so we all enjoyed it a bit, but we know that it's flawed in many ways, is what we're basically saying. Is that right?
Yeah. Nowhere, like you said before, it's kind of regarded as one of, like, the big kind of bad movies that people know of, but it's really not that bad.
That's the thing. I think its enemy has been time rather than itself. Because at the time, it was quite cutting edge. But the further along we get, the more naff it becomes.
But then, enough time, and there's a warm nostalgia for when times were. You used animatronics and physical effects, and people actually physically did things. Like, when sets were built, it's got that kind of Conan feel, where it's cheap and lame and unbelievable. Fair play, they went to some effort. You kind of appreciate it if there's enough time between now and then, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think like the effort was in the right place.
So, what rating do we go with? Do we go maybe with a fatality to sort of rate it? Which there's quite. I mean, I don't know if everyone knows lots of fatalities from the games.
No, I don't.
Or whatever.
I don't, Rich. Maybe like something like a fighter or like a fighting style or something.
Whatever you got, you go ahead and say, I think.
Okay, I suppose it would be a form of kind of martial arts, which is more for show than for like defense. So it's more kind of a dance than a martial art, where it looks kind of. It looks good, and you're putting the effort in, but essentially, it's not a martial art. It's just a dance, and it's not really going to be that much use to anyone.
We get what you're going for, but it doesn't make sense. But we're going to appreciate it anyway.
Yes.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
In a similar vein, I'm going to go with most film weapons that you know by looking at it. It's not going to work like they pretend it works. And that it's got a lot of bits on it doesn't need and have no purpose. But because it's really cool looking, you just accept it and that it can do what they say it can do.
Yeah, there's a lot of weapons in the game, actually, where does it need that many points and sticky outy bits and to be made of ice or have acid? Like, you don't need all that stuff on it. Surely a blade will suffice for chopping. But yeah, we're glad you put it on there. Is that what you mean? Like, it's a little overly silly. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm more familiar with the weapons from Soul Calibur than I am from Mortal Kombat.
Just massive and unbelievably large and can't be wielded by humans.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I'm thinking of where you know it's stupid, but you're taking it. You're going with it.
I'll have a gunblade. That's cool. I'm going to say it is like all of the fatalities in the video games because they are kind of amazing and brilliant if you're 13, but at the same time, they're so silly. Like, the stuff where a man reaches, punches into the back cavity of a man. A back cavity, is that even a thing? And rips out the whole skeleton of someone, like, and then their body crumples away, or they get frozen and they get kicked in two and the ice just all breaks. Actually, in the film, there were deaths where it's like, so when someone's frozen and they get punched, they just shatter into tiny pieces. They wouldn't be like a frozen hunk of meat then. They wouldn't be like just a cow in a freezer. You know what I mean? Like, why do they break into a thousand pieces? So it's kind of these ludicrous things that happen at the end of the game when you win, and you do your special up, down, left chord, and then something insane happens. Maybe someone turns into a dragon. Maybe someone gets split in two. Maybe someone gets an acid bath. You know, it's that kind of ludicrous. This doesn't make any sense, but I still kind of guiltily enjoy it. It's kind of like that. So, yeah, that just, you know, leaves our podcast to be finished. That didn't work, did it? Fatality.
A flawless victory.
Quite. He does not use that properly. Only once there's a flawless victory. Anyway, time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
That was a terrible impression of the song.
It was going quite good. What are you on about?
You were also doing the beginning to a blues song as well, though. The one that goes do 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 do. The Peter Gunn theme.
That sounds like the X-Men theme now, or Crystal Maze. They're very similar.
Test your might. There was one kind of topic that I don't think we really touched upon, and that's just the fact that this was one of the early kind of video game movies. And
it was one of the first ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I guess people really didn't know how to market it, because video games were more or less strictly for kids.
Yeah.
Even these ones, even like the Mortal Kombat beat 'em up, gore, blood everywhere, were still kind of aimed at kids, so they kind of feel like the movie has to be aimed at that
demographic.
At that demographic, yeah. But then because of that, you lose the kind of the gore and the blood and the violence, which is essentially like more than 75% of why the game was really good.
Yeah, and you don't have that thing of being treated seriously, because it's a video game cash-in movie. It isn't given, at the time, you know, they wouldn't go, oh, well, we don't have to care about it because it's just for stupid kids. So they didn't think this could be a really good story that we, you know, this could be done by Asian directors and made into a fantastic pseudo period drama and been treated really seriously and have a really good script, and they just, you know, who's got time for Mortal Kombat to be that good? Ah, it was a wasted opportunity, but a fun ride. So
also, we'll
say good. Oh, no more points. Good.
Directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who I don't think has ever made a good film in his life. Apart from maybe this one. But that's only because it was probably the first.
Who knows?
Oh, that's a bit of a lie. He did make Event Horizon after this, but like he definitely kind of honed it with Mortal Kombat, did his best with Event Horizon, and then just give up.
Maybe he'll come up another time? Probably not, if he makes truly terrible films.
I know that Jamie would want to interject there and argue with you, but I don't know what he'd say, so I can't do it on his behalf.
Yeah, I'm sure there was lots of things Jamie might have wanted to chip in.
And then I'd bring up all the Resident Evil films, Alien vs. Predator, Death Race, that terrible Three Musketeers film.
Oh my. He's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, so
Surprisingly, not so much Mortal Kombat. That's the thing, is it's not that good. So it should be the apology. You should be making apologies for that. But if that's your resume, I mean, for goodness sake.
Yeah, when Mortal Kombat is like pretty much the top of your list, then you know you've kind of failed as a filmmaker.
Sad. Bye.